Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. It's your boy TP Timeless. We are back in the kitchen. Everything is locked and loaded. The table is set. You already know we are back. We got y'all for the next 90 minutes or so. Sports City, y'all sit tight because it's going to be a good one. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. Sports City, the Sunday morning brunch is back, and we are in full effect. And I am having a little hiccup. Don't worry, we'll be back at it. Let's go, Sports City.
Ow. Welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses is taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to rock.
And the only thing I got, one thing to wish you, people.
Good morning.
It's a Sports City chance with Sunday the brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody, don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark and Moses and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, and 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.
The caller number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the chef. I'm going to get this show started. Different note, different angle. Calling in by way of the Metro DMV area, I have Tommy B in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm good. I went to this Canada front to get the hell out of here at spring. Warm the hell up.
Listen. That boy is not lying. And here's what the crazy part about it. Here's what's happening all throughout the, I don't want to say the East Coast, because I know people in Florida are enjoying the sunshine, because one of my boys is actually moving. And it's crazy that I say that he's moving, but he's moving from up here to Florida. He's moving to South Beach, so that's crazy. But winter don't want to go nowhere. Like it's April now. Like, I get it. Spring starts at the end of March, you know what I'm saying? But now it's April. Like now, you know, trees just start to bloom, even though me personally, I actually like that this cold weather stay around because I got allergies. I don't like dealing with the pollen. Like, you'll hear me sneezy, stuffy, sniffly, whatever. But it's cold out here. Like it went, and just mind you, about a week and a half ago, it was about 70 degrees out here. It was like 70 degrees out here. Now it's in the 30s. Like in the 30s, people, it's in the 30s. The one day I went outside, was going to work. I thought I had a chill day. I thought it was going to be like 50, 60s. Went outside with a polo on. Went right back in. I was like, listen, no. I can't do that. I need it. A jacket or whatever. So it's not trying to leave, and this weather is bothering everybody. And watch in about the next 2.5 weeks. People are going to be sick. Mother Nature, you're doing a number on everybody. Calling in by way of the state of Arizona, we have Mr. Silva, the birthday boy weekend. Happy 30th birthday extravaganza. Listen, I remember when I was 30 years old. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Beautiful, partly cloudy, sun poking through, 66, 72 today, with a little bit of light shower. In the Arizona, natural area, whatever. I'm feeling good.
You got to fix the phone a little bit. You got to do something. You got to tweak it. Something going on out there, but I hear you feeling good. There we go. Now we got you. So, Sports City, now that I got everybody's attention and doing this the right way, I told you I'm going to start this show differently. Now, normally, me, y'all know me, I jump right into things and the generic way, so on and so forth, but now that I got everybody in, I'm going to start the show off the right way. Moment of silence for former defensive end of the New Orleans Saints, Will Smith. Okay, rest in peace, Will Smith. Now here we go, because I'm starting to show off on this topic, because I feel a certain way about what is going on. I can't even just say in New Orleans, because New Orleans is close to being a murder capital in itself, even outside of the Katrina situation, so on and so forth. But this situation, now, I had to find out more because I really didn't want to believe it. I was really the links that I was seeing that people were putting up about it, I wanted to see, like, official stuff. I wanted to see, like, the meat and potato type links. I didn't want to see, you know, U.S. such and such. I wanted to see the real stuff. So I started putting links up. Like, if this real, somebody give me confirmation. Somebody give me confirmation. I finally got confirmation. Somebody gave me another link that was the real deal. Now, the situation that occurred, people, he got rear-ended in a car accident. The dude that hit him got out the car, started arguing with him. By the time it didn't even go too long, the dude just started shooting, killed him on sight. Killed Will Smith on sight and hit his girlfriend in the leg twice. She's wounded, but in the hospital. But he was dead at the scene of the crime, in which Will Smith was actually being accompanied by somebody. So the guy that actually shot him was in a Hummer and left the car there and took off by foot. So more than likely, they have the name of the person that did this to him, unless it was a stolen vehicle. Then it's a whole other scenario. So from what I was gathering on the situation, it's extremely sad. And you know, regardless if you're a pro athlete or a regular civilian, so on and so forth, the value of life is just being undermined, if you will, and for a car accident. You want to see people see another day, so on and so forth, but for a former, and I don't even like giving him credit for this, but I do now that he's no longer on this earth, former national champion, even though that was because they beat my Hurricanes, I feel some type of way about that. And I got a message, you know, from a Buckeye fan that I know talking junk. Oh, he won the national championship up against the Hurricanes. So it's like, yeah, shut up. You guys cheated. But anyway, I'm not even getting into that, even though I could. But former national champion, well, he's still a national champion regardless. I can't say former. But national champion in college football, wins the Super Bowl with the Saints, also in that run with Drew Brees up against Peyton Manning, so on and so forth. And this is just a tough scenario on how or when will people get it. Like, you got this slogan, and then this is actually feeding into the Ray Lewis situation, the Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, All Lives Matter at the end of the day. I don't even want to do that color stuff. Like, enough is enough, man. People dying, people getting in trouble, people going to jail. Like, people got to be smart, man. At the end of the day, people got to be smart. And I listen, and the reason why it's getting to me real big is because Will Smith is my age. Like, we are the same age. Like, and he is gone from Earth because of a misunderstanding, a dispute, or whatever that happened in the middle of traffic. So this guy shot him in traffic. Like they weren't even, like, on a highway or something. He got rear-ended, and the dude that shot him is at fault. He hit him in the back. So I don't know. I definitely wanted to give him his moment of silence, talk about this, because this is big. Like, you know, pro athletes, some that think they're above the law or, you know, above regular civilians get caught up in these scenarios, and anything can happen on the side of them doing something vicious or malicious, or somebody that could be a fan, so on and so forth, doing something malicious as well. So I want to see how you guys feel about this. I had to start this up this way because it's news that started my night last night, you know, on how it happened basically a little after midnight. And I was up seeing everything that was going on about it. But I want to hear how you guys feel about it. Tommy, I'll go with you first. Your thoughts on the Will Smith murder.
It's sad. I woke up this morning to the story, seeing it on my one app on my phone, pulled it up, read it. It's nonsense. It's awful. I'm not even going to try to make it racist or anything, because everybody knows I live in the DMV area. The way I grew up, I've seen this my whole life. I mean, murders and just everything. But it's to the point something's got to be done. I mean, innocent people, nonsense, losing their life and everything. It's horrible. Now, the story I read, the shooter was in custody and was being questioned. There was an accident. There was an argument. He opened up fire, shot him four times, shot his wife, like you said, twice in the leg. She was taken. I mean, this stuff's got to stop. I mean, it's got to the point to where, especially down in the D.C., Baltimore area, surrounding areas in there, I don't even like going out there because, don't get me wrong, I'm not a punk. I grew up, I mean, but, I mean, you get people to just start opening up firing for no sense. I mean, it's got, something's got to be done.
And it ain't about being a punk. I think it's more or less about trying to survive and be smart going into those select areas. Because let's be real. Look at the Baltimore area and how many sport teams they have out there. They got the Orioles and the Ravens there. Then you got in the D.C. area, you got the Wizards. You got the Nationals there as well. In those select areas, you got a lot of pro teams, pro venue teams, trying to attract people to come to these events. And just like Tommy said, they don't want to go because they know that something could pop off, something could end up happening out there. And this wasn't even at an event. This was, you know, a social night, you know, out and about doing what they need to do out there. But, again, I mean, this is a tough thing to swallow. Looking at Will Smith, via 34, everything that he's done, whether it be in the community of Louisiana or, you know, on the field for that New Orleans team and, you know, if he's if the guy that actually, you know, shot him or took his life is actually a fan of the thing, so on and so forth. But this is the crazy part that I grabbed from this is that they think, and I don't know how true it is, and I don't want this to be true, but they think that his wife may have something to do with it. Because let's be honest, you know the shooter had to seen the lady in there and he hit her twice. If you're going to take his life and shoot her two times, she's seen your face. There's no way that, unless you're driving around with a mask or so on and so forth. But that is very interesting to, you know, see how this goes down. Nacho, I'll come to you on this. Your thoughts on the murder of Tommy Beard. That's a Tommy. Wow. Will Smith. Wow. I apologize, Tommy. I'm looking at your name right now. But the murder of Will Smith.
Again. There we go. You guys got me?
Yeah, I got you. You're good now.
Okay, yeah. The whole situation is that now we'll start off with the aspect that I and I've heard a couple, you know, things on the internet. I've read a couple things, and right now, like you said, some of it, most of it, a lot of it, speculation, pure rumor, with except for what has been released by the police department and things of that nature. What we do know for a fact is rear end. Argument, shots fired, his death, she shot a couple times, and suspect fled on foot and was subsequently captured and detained. Now, the speculatory stuff, you know, we can go on and on. Again, did she have something to do with it? Did the shooter know anyone in the car before, you know, letting off those rounds? I mean, that's six shots I count inside of somebody's body. Who knows how many in and around the car there are after letting go of a whole clip and not, you know, do you really take the time to load another clip and finish the job, so to speak, so you don't leave anyone alive? I don't know if that's in your mind frame, mindset. This isn't, to me, what we're looking at, a calculated cold blood killing assassination type thing. To where, you know, he's so smart, he's planned it out and yada yada. This, to me, every day in my city, in Tommy's city, in your city, Ty, in everyone's city listening around Sports City, someone gets shot because of road rage. Whether there's a fatality or not, someone gets shot or shot at. Yesterday alone, coming in, I got two incidents on the local news app about road rage, two people getting out of their car, two separate instances, one shots fired, one was a verbal and a physical altercation. Whatever it is, for whatever reason, there is a group, a set of people, you know, trying to think of the word, where race isn't an issue, age isn't an issue. For whatever reason, these group of people should not be behind the wheel. They do not know how to drive. They do not know how to act. And if somebody else on the road somewhat does something that they find unbecoming of a driver, all hell breaks loose. We've driven with these people. We know these people. They just shouldn't be behind the wheel. Sometimes when you mix that with someone who probably doesn't care about life, probably doesn't care about anything else but themselves, and you put weapons into the mix like guns and knives, baseball bats, that's just a deadly combination that we see on the streets of every city every day. And it's something that I don't know how we remedy. I don't know how we fix it, but something needs to be done. You know, we have organizations dutifully so against drunk driving, whether it be mothers, brothers, stepfathers. I mean, there's so many things against drunk driving. We need to have things against, you know, erratic driving, irrational driving, people who just don't know how to drive. And it, you know, sometimes it just goes too far. We see it, you know, I see it almost on a daily basis here in my city, driving around, someone yelling, rolling down the window, whether it comes to as minimal as rolling down the window and yelling at each other, to as physical as fighting or even guns. I've seen it all, and it's so, and it goes from the 5 mile an hour in your neighborhood, 20 mile an hour, to the 75 mile an hour on the highway. It doesn't matter where you're at. I think this is that has more to do with it than anything else. To me, you know, we talk about the celebrity issue, the all-star issue, the on-TV issue. I know the NFL very well. I know players very well. You could walk Will Smith up to me before he passed, and God's honest truth, I wouldn't know he was Will Smith from the New Orleans Saints. His size and stature, obviously, I'm not dumb. I would figure he would be a football player. But I wouldn't pick him out of a lineup or pick him up out of people and go, that's Will Smith. He's not recognizable. He's not world-renowned. If you're not a New Orleans Saints fan or a Will Smith fan, you're not going to pick him up out of a lineup. So I don't want to put too much under the emphasis of, you know, maybe he knew him or, you know, maybe he was a fan and, you know, whatever speculation there could be around it, you know, not getting a sack or not doing something. I've heard so many speculatory things towards this. I think more or less it comes down to the fact that there are drivers out there that don't need to be out there. And there are people out there driving with weapons that don't need to be driving with weapons. Point blank, period. You know, it's just the way it is. And sometimes we're going to see deadly issues. I think the problem, or not the problem, I think the thing about this is it is a Super Bowl champion, a national champion, a football player, you know, who we can cling to. And when you say that NFL superstar murdered because of road rage, I think this could start a rolling conversation, no pun intended, to get it going and you know, shed some light on the situation, because road rage is not a joke. People have died from it, and I know personally people who've gotten seriously injured because of road rage. You know, being a third party, someone else on the road, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, stop.
Ty, you know for a fact, probably, not joke, don't come to the DMV. Trust me, because it's 3-4 lanes, and it's anywhere between 70 to 80 miles per hour nonstop. The cops don't say a damn thing, because they know damn well they're not going to catch people. Don't come to the metro. Just stay out there.
And I mean, just look at the scenario of, and I don't know if this is a road rage situation or if this was a plot to set him up or put him in a scenario, and truly the way that I feel that this could have been a setup situation. What, you just kind of crash into the back of a Mercedes-Benz truck, from what I'm gathering, and just get out and ladder up on him. I mean, people are going to hear that argument go on. You're in the middle of traffic with a Hummer, like, and you're in an orange Hummer at that, and just flee the scene, and knowing that your life is on the line. And this is something that I'm actually going to go a little outside of sports on this one. We got to try and, you know, do a better situation on you know, killings and crime in itself. You mean in these select cities? Now, I'm going to take some of the select cities that we have out there. New Orleans is one of them. Dallas is another one. Miami is another one. Memphis is another one. Chicago is another one. Cincinnati is another one, where they have enough killings or murders that they can actually film a damn TV show. They can film a
TV
show.
Put Baltimore and D.C. in there, too.
Yeah, but the Baltimore and D.C. one, they don't. I don't even know why they don't do First 48 like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, First 48 is in all of those six cities like that. You know?
And
like,
a lot of that, and a lot of that's problems out there around here are drugs and gangs.
Right. Well, I mean, whatever could initialize the situation, and it's true, a lot of that could be gang-related because they have to get their initiation situation down where they have to do something criminal to be let into the gang. And I don't even want to say anything, you know, that may put me in trouble or put jeopardize my life, but I just think it's crazy. That's crazy that people have to do that to be a part of it. I don't even respect the gang situation as it is. I mean, if they're a peaceful group of people, then fine. But for you guys to be, you know, intent on killing or robbing, like let's just paint the picture. If it's a Blood or a Crip. And a Blood or a Crip rob somebody else's mom. But picture, you know, like karma comes back around. What if that happened to your mother or sister or somebody you know, or get shot up that somebody that you love dearly and ain't going to see again? Like, y'all people, y'all got to use y'all heads, man. Actually turn the number around. Make it so that, you know, TV shows like A&E can't film a show like the First 48. Y'all got that much going on in y'all select cities that's what's going on. Like they could actually film these situations in 2 days, find the murderer, and book him. And you shot him on and left on foot and got caught. Unreal. Unreal stuff. I definitely wanted to start the show out like this, because this is huge. And this ain't even like something that people need to overlook. And I just want to see the storm of the people in the NFL and how many people speak on his behalf. I only wanted to look at it like the Smith family or people from Ohio State or people in the NFL. People from New Orleans, excuse me. I want to see the NFL. I want to see people in the NFL saying, like, them being in these big-time cities where these cities have their livelihood, where they live around the surrounding suburban areas, that they could go out and try to live the life or you know, go out and enjoy a night. It could be in trouble just like any other human being. I don't feel that's fair to nobody. I don't even look at it as like the celebrities, you know, holding hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in their bank account that these guys get jammed up or shot up or whatever. Nobody deserves to go through that type of stuff. And Will Smith, being a big name in a big city, especially a city that's trying to rebuild, like you guys are trying to build yourself up back from 2005. I mean, yeah, it was 11 years ago, but that city was in terror. Nobody had a house out there. It was flooded all over the place. Terrible stuff, man. Terrible. And anything else that you guys have before we get away from it, though? Okay, the silence helps me. Nacho, I wanted to ask you about the fight game last night before we get into other things here in the kitchen. Manny Pacquiao, in his final fight, wins unanimously in a decision over Timothy Bradley. Your thoughts on the fight, especially the way that Pacquiao performed up against Bradley. Your thoughts on Bradley, too. I got my own thoughts about how Bradley looked himself, especially with Teddy Atlas. I'm going to just say it right now. I'm shaking my head. I'm shaking my head. He didn't look ready. He didn't look ready. But your thoughts in that fight.
I absolutely felt that Teddy Atlas did not train his fighter correctly. I think he felt his fighter was trained, was ready for this fight, and thought that his coaching on the sideline would get him over the edge. I truly believe Teddy thought that, you know, it was that little bit of a voice in the head that was all Timothy Bradley needed to beat Manny Pacquiao. When we all know that he needed to train his rear end off for a top-notch fighter who was on his retirement fight ready to go out. So, you know, you were going to get everything and everything from Mr. Manny Pacquiao whatever ounce he had left in him, it was gonna, he was going to give you it all. So it was really ill-advised from Kenny Atlas to not, which to me it looked like they didn't do any training. And when we say by that is he didn't study the opponent, he didn't try to figure out a weakness or try to figure out a way to attack Manny Pacquiao. It looked like he just went in there with the set of skills he had, worked out, got a real cut body, him and Teddy just thought that, you know, Teddy's pep talks in the corner would get him over the edge, and it just didn't work. And on Manny's side, like I said, he trained, he got ready, he gave him everything he had for his last fight. Fully anticipated him to retire after this, like he did, and it just it was a total domination on Manny's part. You know, I really thought he got all up in him and gave him everything he could handle. I mean, the overreaction on the knockdown, where the picture's everywhere now, where Bradley's on the back and he rolls all the way to, like, pretty much the back of his head, you know, then rolls all the way over and does a backflip on the ground roll type thing. It just, you know, it's too much. I didn't know what was that about. I mean, just you got knocked off balance and you fell back. I get it. It's just, come on. Too much theatrical. I didn't like it. I thought it was very, very soccerish to me. But other than that, it was a very dominant fight by Manny. Go out on a win, go out on a retirement, and just, you know, go run the Philippines or whatever. I fully anticipate him to devote himself to, things of that nature. So I'm sure we'll get into that in their future in a minute. But as it goes for the fight, it was just a pure domination. And like you said, Teddy and Timothy Bradley came in very ill-prepared for Manny Pacquiao, and it showed.
Okay, and it's like this. This is what I stress, especially after the fact that you're saying that. How is Timothy Bradley not prepared? You've seen him twice. You won the first one in which everybody, even though I was talking junk about it, say, you know what, Pacquiao lost that fight. I was just talking junk to a lot of people that were Pacquiao fans, because a lot of people try to throw that situation, Pacquiao ready for Floyd. I would just do that just for Floyd reasons. But everybody, even including myself, knew Manny won that first fight. Second fight comes out, Pacquiao wins the even of the scales at 1-1. How are you not prepared? How are you not coming up with a game plan to basically be ready for Manny Pacquiao? How? Any knocked you down and all the type of memes, so on and so forth, they can put out if they want to about that situation. He got outworked by a guy that is walking away from boxing. He's done. Like, man, he's done with the sport. And people are going to pay. You are lucky. This is funny. You are lucky that you got a pay-per-view fight because it was Manny Pacquiao's last fight. You think, I wish somebody would say Timothy Bradley $44.99 for a fight to watch him on pay-per-view. You must be out of your mind. You better do what Adrian Broner and I'm doing. Get on the Premier Boxing Channel and do what you need to do, or go on Spike or if ESPN picking up fight. I'm not paying money to see you fight. I'm not. I respect Teddy Atlas. All my life, that's all I knew about the boxing was that Teddy Atlas was in my corner. You know what I'm saying? And I know he had you prepared in other fights. But in this fight, I don't know what it was, but I don't know if you were giving Manny the fight because this is his last fight in boxing and wanted him to go out on a bang, or if you think that you're going to be ready for the next couple of guys that are in the division that you're in, like a Sean Porter or like a one-time Thurman. Like, there's a bunch of guys that are in that division that I don't know if they would want to fight you because there won't be no draw there. He was taking care of Chubb before he got to a big name like Manny Pacquiao. Or did Pacquiao draw this one up because he knew he could take care of Bradley? And he sure did show out. He sure did show out and went out with a bang. So I give Pacquiao a ton of credit. But I think Pacquiao kept that pressure on him all fight long, flooring him at that. In all three of the fights, I have not seen Bradley, like, convincingly take control of the fight at all. And people try to throw out the scenario that he looked good tonight. I know. No, I'm not buying it. People just do that for the sake of talking about the sport. He was not ready by any means. By any means.
Can I say I didn't watch the fight. I just want to throw it out there. You and Nacho can ask, could there be any way this fight was fixed just to where they could get that Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather again?
No. There's no way that draw, the money that was made, that was once in a lifetime for both fighters. They're not going to pull in the amounts they pulled for that fight. That fight was quite literally 8 years in the making. Everyone from your great-grandmother to your seven-year-old son who just figured out what boxing is, everyone wanted to see that fight. Now no one wants to see it, so you're never going to ever get the draw or the anticipation again, no matter how many people scream from their mouths. So there's no way that this was fixed. But let's not forget, Timothy Bradley is living off of a one-win Tackler Fight of the Year fight against Ruslan Provodnikov. That fight in and of itself made his career. He has been living off that since then. He got the decision that we all know was Manny Pacquiao's win. We all know this is 3-0 Manny Pacquiao against Timothy Bradley. The surprising thing is that people actually thought Bradley had a chance. I think they gave that more so to the fact that Pacquiao was walking away. We all knew this was Pacquiao's last fight. We knew he was going to, go do what he's going to do in the Philippines. But this is what we knew. The fact that Timothy Bradley didn't try to get better from the last two times he fought him, it's evident of Timothy Bradley, and it is of Teddy Atlas. Again, the last fight Timothy had and Teddy with the first one with Teddy, and he's in the corner and the firemen, and we put out fires, and how great was that to watch? But it was really going back and putting that on mute and watching the fight, it tells a different story. I want everyone to do that who's a boxing fan. If you watch that fight with the sound on, you got hype, and you listen to the announcers talk about it, put it on mute, watch it without the sound, and look at that fight, and it shows you get a different story from it than you do listening to it and getting hype and things of that nature. So, to me, Timothy Bradley's been living off that Provodnikov fight for years now, and this is the end of him. Like you said, there's no one going to give him any kind of a break. I think the only way he gets a big fight is on the what would be the card, the undercard fight. It won't be a main eventer, and he just got demolished for 12 straight rounds. It's just it was literally not fun for me to watch. The back and forth that we saw in that Provodnikov fight, the back and forth that we saw in the his name escapes me right now, but there's another fight Timothy was in. There was about one or two, and that's it. The rest, he's clearly not ready for the creme de la creme of this weight class. That's for sure. The names you rattled off, and anyone else particularly, to me, he's done for. He's going to get fights. People will want to fight him. His name is big. That fight of the year, beating somebody with the credentials that he has, even though we all know he didn't win, he has a Manny Pacquiao victory. He's going to be a stepping stone for a lot of people in this weight class. He doesn't have the talent of a Paulie Malignaggi, but I think he will be similar to that. A lot of people will come in and try to make a name by whipping up on Timothy Bradley.
You know what, Nacho? and Tommy, I'm going to do this. I'm playing the fence here. I think this was a fix. I think so. I would have looked Manny Pacquiao, just iced everybody in the world, because it wasn't just the U.S. that paid for that damn fight, the world, for $127 million and had to get another pay-per-view fight to work. In the setup, a Timothy Bradley Part 3. just like all of the other fights that had their trilogies with him. You know what I'm saying? Like, what better of a situation for Pacquiao to go out, get the money that he produced, and have an interesting career, where I actually like the fact that Max Kellerman tried to throw out pound for pound, meaning he may be the best boxer that he's ever seen. I laughed so hard, it wasn't even funny. It wasn't even funny because of where Manny Pacquiao came from. And I can't even, you know, totally disgrace of, you know, the athletic charge or inspiration of him, you know, moving up several weight classes. But then once he stopped, you know, he got caught using, you know, performance-enhancing drugs, this is where all of the questions start to stir up. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that doesn't draw some type of hype towards you. You also try to compare the Sugar Ray Leonard compared to Duran and how people still consider Roberto Duran a better pound-for-pound boxer than Sugar Ray Leonard. It just made me laugh on now how these people are trying to backtrack and give Manny Pacquiao a lot of credit, and where Timothy Bradley likes to come forward, but he has no other ability in the ring but coming forward and trying to make a fight happen. When you're coming forward up against an animal, you are walking right into the trap. There was no game plan to stay away from that left hand at all. You ended up getting dropped twice. Listen, I don't get it. I really do. Now, watch this. This is the reason why I say this. Now, watch Bradley get into his next fight and be an animal, take care of whoever he take care of, start working his way through the weight class and building his name back up before, I say, about 4 or 5 years before he be done. Like that's how I'm looking at it. He probably got 4 or 5 years before they say, you know what, time for you to hang those gloves up. It could be earlier, I don't know, but I know that his pay-per-view draw to me is gone. Similar to Adrian Broner. Adrian Broner won't even backtrack to go to pay-per-view right now. Adrian Broner getting all the pre-fights that he can and trying to build up a storm. Why do you think Adrian Broner tried to set up this fight with Floyd Mayweather? Like, I'm actually already looking at the Floyd Mayweather situation and saying Floyd don't even need to pay that no mind. Floyd don't even need to entertain that, because this will be a big payday for a guy like Adrian Broner, and he has nothing to lose. Swing for the fences, knock Floyd out, this rebuilds my career again. After he couldn't even take care of Sean Porter, why don't he get the rematch against Sean Porter? Like there's so many different scenarios in boxing that they try to get up a big payday because of the storyline. And look at the storyline that's drawn out here for Manny. Manny walking into the sunset, taking care of business up against Timothy Bradley. Timothy Bradley, a guy that rebuilt himself in the last couple of fights after him teaming up with Teddy Atlas, but he looked like an animal with Teddy Atlas, but in this fight, he doesn't look like an animal anymore. Like really? Like, nowhere in this fight. I'm confused. Tommy, I'm playing the fifth, and I'm with you on this one. I think so. Show me different. Make me feel different about it. I don't.
Bradley won't win another fight before the calendar year slips next year. If he fights this year once, twice, three times, he's not going to win any fight. Next year, maybe he wins a fight. If he takes on someone moving up or some nobody, he's got to fight on like a PBC undercard 2 hours before the main event. Against Bradley Stennis, if he takes on anyone relatively good, he's going to get screamed, beat, however you want to put it. If he's been exposed these last few fights, he's done. I don't buy that. I don't buy the thinking or whatever. He fought someone with a talent, whether or not, you know, people want to look at him as a talent or not. The guy, Manny Pacquiao, he's a talented fighter. You know, you hate on him all you want. He couldn't beat Floyd Mayweather. He couldn't beat, he got knocked out by JMM. So, you know, he took some losses. I'll never proclaim him as the best ever, but he is a great fighter. He was an elite fighter at one point. This was the last fight. He went out where he wanted to go out at the best of his ability. This is totally on the shoulders of Teddy Atlas as Timothy Bradley's trainer. The fact that Timothy Bradley isn't as good as anyone wants him to be, look at the record. Look at it. Like you said, his pay-per-view draw was done for. Unless somebody changed all 10 mouths, or unless somebody big feels like they need a refresher course, just a tune-up fight, or they gotta, you know, take on somebody real. That's the only way you fight somebody big. Other than that, man, I think he's done.
And I need you to come back to the phone too. Now, the only way I can see him getting a big draw fight, like somebody that would make it interesting for him, but I don't know if he has pay-per-view behind him. Like I said, him and Adrian Broner could go at it. Timothy Bradley, Adrian Broner, that might set up for a good fight. You know, both of these guys falling out of the pay-per-view ranks and settling right down in the PBC or fighting on Spike, things of that nature. I wouldn't even want to see him fight like a Cal Brook. He'll get destroyed or Sean Porter. Sean Porter will probably take his neck off. Like, I couldn't think of that. And a lot of guys that are undefeated within that boxing realm, I wouldn't want to sit up here and lose to a guy that's gotten dominated by Pacquiao twice, couldn't figure it out or look better in any of the fights. It didn't even look like a Gotti Ward brawl. You know what I'm saying? Like you were going for Ward or going for Gotti. Like, it no sway at all. It was all onslaught Pacquiao. It's all onslaught Pacquiao. I feel different. One more fight I'll get out of you, or not even a fight, a no contest situation, or not even a no contest, but a knockout. And Anthony Joshua taking care of business. Nacho, your thoughts on this guy? Big name, heavyweight boxer, youngest or quickest to do it in the heavyweight realm. In his first 16 fights, he is a world champion. And in all 16 of his fights, he's finished with a knockout. This is a higher knockout rate than Triple G.
Yeah, this kid is something. The actual fight itself, I didn't see. I saw the knockout highlight. I wasn't at the boxing party Ben's fight yet. But that's someone that I had to look up. I had to figure out who he is. You know, a lot of people are gonna see whether or not he's ready. To me, I think he is. Just watching, you know, that little bit and having to read up on him, I think he's ready for Wilder. You put him in the ring and you see what they're made of. It's just, you know, boxing in the heavyweight division needs someone to dominate. Get a young kid like this, especially if he can go in there and dominate Deontay Wilder. Who you know, is trying to build up his stamina and go deeper in the rounds, deeper in the fight. So it's just, I think to me, you set it up as quick as possible, and you get the draw out there, whether it's out there in England or it's over here. You figure it out and you get it done, because I think we need to get some more draw into the heavyweight division and get some more get a crowd going. I'm definitely interested to see where they take this kid. Hopefully he doesn't, you know, go off into obscurity and fight nobody for the next couple of years. I'm ready to see what happens.
Well, this is the thing, because he's building a draw. So they don't want to put him with the big names right now. And if he gets totally cleared up, then it's like, did we put him in there too soon? Like, they want him to get seasoned. But I know one of the seasoned boxers that's looking at him that wants to fight him so bad because they're from the same select area, and that's David Haymaker Hay that wants to fight him, where I don't know if he's ready, but the way that he's taking care of business is similar to guys like Deontay Wilder or Klitschko knocking guys out almost every time they're in the ring. I mean, Klitschko had a 9-year run before Fury took care of business and won that fight by decision, which they're actually scheduled to fight this July. That's a whole nother scenario in itself. Hopefully Klitschko comes out better, but if Tyson keeps him away with that jab, there's nothing Klitschko can do. I mean, they could fight 15 rounds if they want. Tyson stayed away from him. Great game plan. Klitschko looked like Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather. Once you take that knockout punch away from him, can they box? Can they do what is necessary to win the fight? And I think the same scenario will be drawn out again in that Tyson Fury Klitschko situation. So for Anthony Joshua, I don't know if he's ready for these guys. Nacho, I agree with you. People don't want to see him fight cupcakes or tomato cans at the end of the day, but this is going to be the scenario that's going to be seen while he draws up a bigger hype, probably gets to 20, 25 wins, and then he'll start to fight the bigger names. But by then, a lot of these heavyweights that are in that rank are starting to be older. The only one I see that'll be there will probably be Deontay Wilder, because Klitschko was 39, or 40 this year. You know, Tyson Fury's up there in age as well. The heavyweight rank is starting to make their way back, but the big names are close to the door. You know what I'm saying? So that is the one scenario that I see. But I do understand where you're coming from. Like, you want to see him go up against these guys while they're in their peak, but he's 16 and old, 16 knockouts. Does he start a mountain losses right now while he has a target on him because he has a belt now? He has a belt now. So I think that's something that they're going to try and protect their investment and see how long they can ride that horse. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I know me and Tommy were in the green room in discussion about a very controversial situation that happened in sports yesterday. Tommy, your thoughts on what happened in the metro area yesterday?
Yeah, I was actually had tickets for yesterday's Marlins and Wizards game. Or not, sorry, I'm watching pregame for the Wizards. Nationals game. And I was, thank God I wasn't too close. I was able to turn around. I got an email about, I say, 10:30, 11 o'clock. Text message came through. Game was postponed due to too cold of a wet weather. I said, wait a minute. This is, I was sitting there thinking, I pulled, literally pulled off and was thinking, wait a minute, this has got to be a joke. Really? Too cold. So I was going through Twitter feeds, going through Facebook feeds, just to make sure it was true. It was posted, it was because of the cold. This is a damn joke. Because Friday night, I literally watched some of this game. The White Sox hosting the Indians. It was about eighth inning into the ninth. It was putting down the snow up. Okay, in April. Now, I know cold weather is cold. It was snowing. And everybody and the mother knows a baseball is white. There were players that were dropping fly balls because the ball was blending in, or they couldn't find it. They had to wait. I get home, back home, already pissed off. Pittsburgh and Cincinnati played last yesterday. 37 degrees. Okay? With all this stuff that Under Armour makes now, you know Bryce Harper's got it. He's one of their big sponsors. There's got to be more than the cold weather why they did not play this game.
Now, I understand that it's cold, and this is the one thing that bothers me about the team that I follow, being the Minnesota Twins. I mean, the Twins play in Minnesota, as I just stated, but everybody knows that's one of the colder regions in the United States. And it's like if they make the postseason, what happens in the month of October, November? They could potentially see snow. Are you guys going to start canceling postseason games if it starts to get cold or snowing out there? Like, these are the things that I'm looking at right now, in which you can't, you know, I mean, you blame Mother Nature for it, but, I mean, there's nowhere that you could post a letter or tell her to stop doing what she's doing. It's going to be either cold outside or snow, rain, so on and so forth. But just for the extreme nature of how the temperature outside, it wasn't like it was raining or snow was happening. It was just the outside atmosphere just being under comfort zone. But then you have to think about this, though. If being in a nature where this game could go anywhere from 2.5 to three and a half hours long of people sitting outside in the cold with nothing to warm them up, or continue to have these guys going through your concession stands getting coffee and cocoa, things of that nature, which actually helps you guys because you're getting money off of these guys at the end of the day, which if you go to a Yankee game, I don't even want to start talking about how much money's involved, you know, on stuff you're going to buy at the concession stand. But I don't know. Is this a situation where the players or the managers or the organizations themselves, you know, try to come up with a later date postponing this game and try to have a doubleheader later on in the schedule? It's feasible.
There's a doubleheader May 14th.
Okay, so this is actually a month and 4 days away when they have the doubleheader go down. So, I mean, again, then you look at a situation where it could have been different. People like, oh, well, this team was tired in the first game and ready in the second game, vice versa. That's the one thing I don't like about doubleheaders. But it's an unfortunate situation, especially for both teams, because the Nationals are a team that are, you know, taking the National League East by storm. And the Marlins, I mean, look at what they brought there. I think they are one of the teams must-see TV You get Stan back healthy. You get Mattingly down there. You got Barry Bonds down there. This is an interesting team. So you got a lot of people that want to see the Bryce Harper Stanton battle and see how many bombs can go out of the building. Like that is a must see TV game. So outside of Tommy, you got to think about how many people were in that area that could have wanted to see that game just for that purpose and had that only opportunity to go out there Saturday and couldn't do it. And May 14th, whenever that date comes around, I think that's a Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know. I think that is a crazy scenario that is happening. What has happened? In the National League East for a divisional battle at that, and it's early in the season. But say it again.
And Baltimore was going to try to play later on that day. Okay. I turned it over to see what was going on, and they had people like Manny Machado and Jonathan Scope. You had that special Under Armour stuff. It had the hood up over their head, went through the long sleeves. They literally was going to try to play, but a big rainstorm came in, and they finally postponed it at 8 o'clock. And you could literally see people, the players, breathing in the white air coming out because it was so cold. But, I mean, they were going to try to play in Baltimore. Come on, D.C., step it up.
I don't know what to say, man. I mean, of course, we're going to come up with our scenarios. I think they're thinking about the value of the fence. I'm trying to, you know, be the devil's advocate for the fence. I think they're looking at the value of the fan coming to the game and how many people would come because of the nature outside. I don't know. I'm just trying to paint that picture.
You stand out in the cold for football.
True. But how many baseball fans or football fans? Nothing bad with you. I'm just saying. I'm trying to draw the scenario that I'm thinking that they would think. You know what I'm saying? Like, how many of these people, you know, are football fans that sit out there like that? Because I'm going to be honest. I love to be at a football game, even if it's cold weather. But I'm not one of those football fans that paints their body and sit outside in 20-degree weather with the team's emblem on my body. Hell no, I feel like it's too cold for that. So, like, you don't see diehards in a baseball game like that. You'll see a handful, but, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot of games that take off today that are in the 30s. Like, okay, so the Phillies play the Mets today. They're a 37-degree day. And also down there in the Metro, again, the Orioles play the Rays. It's a 39-degree day. So, I mean, are they going to start X-ing games? And also, in the same matchup that you're talking about, the Marlins play the Nationals, too, 38-degree day. It's cold. It's a strong cold front going throughout the nation where, I mean, are you going to start icing games? They said it is supposed to warm up this week. Like, does everybody look at it like that? Like all of the select stadiums in Major League Baseball start to shut down games because of the weather until it starts to warm up by this week? Like, that's interesting.
I've said and I've always said, all these stadiums should have a tractor roof where you can open it, close it, everything.
I agree. They got the money to make it happen, but they won't. I think they'd rather keep that money in their pockets and line their pockets. And I think the biggest, cold front of the day is the Yankees playing the Tigers. They play at night, tonight, 8 o'clock matchup, 32 degrees. That's freezing. And you know the temperature drops at night. So this is what they're facing out there in Michigan right now. So that's a whole
scenario. And
you know
damn well they're going to play it because ESPN is doing it. It's the Sunday night game. So you know ESPN is going to make sure they're out there playing.
And you know who's pitching? Verlander. So everybody's outside for JV going up against Tanaka, in which the Yankees just stole. Well, I can't even say stole. They beat the Tigers pretty bad yesterday, 8-4. Where this is actually the rubber match. Who wins the series is because they split 1-1. But you know this is a real matchup for Verlander going up against the Yankees, fresh out the gate. And if the Yankees are still the pinstripes, if they could go in there and get out of there with that series, that'd be big for them up against a quality team in the Detroit Tigers. So, just like you said, I know that this game will be played. It's going to be freezing. They have a lot of big-time millionaire players out there being in the Detroit. Well, both. I can't even just say the Yankees. I mean, just say the Detroit Tigers. The Yankees got multimillionaires all across the board, too. But the Verlander situation, I mean, he's trying to bounce back off of having a questionable season last season and having injuries riddle his situation also. And the same thing for Miguel Cabrera, too. I mean, I don't know. If they start to watch how cold it is while these guys are out there. Because more injuries can happen while they are in a cold atmosphere. That is the truth. Okay, so I'm going to get away from that one. Now, here goes the elephant in the room on the situation. The Golden State Warriors in their chase to break the 72-win record by the 95-96 Chicago Bulls, in which Golden State went into Memphis and survived a 100-99 battle, winning by one in Tennessee up against the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, here goes the scenario, too. They play the Spurs tonight in a back-to-back. So they went up against the Grizzlies yesterday. They play the Spurs tonight. And there's a lot on the line here. There's a lot on the line. One, the Spurs have not lost at home all season long. They want to be the first team to do it. Best cop get a different situation that happened Thursday. Because Thursday, it didn't even look like the Spurs were ready to play the Warriors at all. The Warriors were taking care of business. They did not beat them by 30, though, but they beat them by double digits out there in the Oracle. And this is after the Warriors had just lost two interesting games at home up against the Wolves and the Celtics. They come out and get their, you know, their A game intact and beat up on the Spurs. Now the Spurs go back home with everybody playing. Popovich saying everybody's playing. No one's resting. But yet you got a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge who has a dislocated finger. He is available to go. Do they get the same effort out of this team? Do they stop the Warriors, or do the Warriors get past the Spurs and basically smooth sailing back in the Oracle up against the Grizzlies for their final game of the season? Your thoughts on Golden State with their final two games coming around? They survived last night in a one-point win up against Memphis without a lot of players for that Memphis team. Memphis was in this game all the way to the bitter end, and Golden State won. Do you think Golden State is on target to get to 72, 73? Your thoughts?
I think this game tonight that we'll be watching on NBA TV will be very good. I think the atmosphere will be a playoff atmosphere. I think the Spurs really come out and play their game to see. I think this is the matchup we said earlier. The Spurs, Pop's going to go out to win this one. And I actually think the Spurs win this one. I do not, and I'll go out even a little further. The Warriors may lose their last game against Memphis because Memphis may come out and play everybody that they can. I'll go out and say that too. Golden State will go to, they'll make it to the NBA Finals. I don't know if anybody, maybe San Antonio, maybe OKC. Those are the only three that I see that could knock off this Warriors team. It's going to be very interesting tonight. Actually, all three games tonight on NBA TV could be interesting, except the first one. God help me, my Wizards. Tonight's going to be very interesting. I'm making sure everything's done and I'm home to watch this one tonight. But it's going to be a playoff atmosphere and a type of game.
Now, here's an interesting situation that I see. In that game that you said that the Grizzlies could actually stun them. They are in the Oracle where they already let two teams that are, one is playing good. I can't even undervalue what the Celtics are doing this season. The Celtics are playing good basketball. But the other being a Minnesota Timberwolves team who are heavily under 500, starting to play good basketball as of now, late in the season, where a lot of people look at them like, okay, we'll just, you know, keep ourselves in condition to play this game. However, the outcome of the game doesn't really matter toward the end of the season. It's, you know, other teams look at it like, well, we can catch them vulnerable just like the Wolves caught them vulnerably. But I don't think that other teams sit up there and measure, you know, Golden State by them losing to a Minnesota Timberwolves team and saying that they can knock them off. In which, the Grizzlies, if they are in front of that you know, 72-9 situation. They're still playing without Marc Gasol for the season. Conley's not out there on the floor either. Them basically walking a thin line if they're going to be fifth or sixth seed, because if they're a fifth seed, it's interesting because they play the Clippers. If they're a sixth seed, then they fall down and end up matching up against the Thunder, where that actually is a suitable matchup for the Grizzlies, because the Grizzlies and the Thunder, well, they just have their history. And y'all know I know, because I'm tired of seeing the Grizzlies in the postseason. Zebo and Ibaka going back and forth. Or even in the other series, Zebo and Blake Griffin, because Blake Griffin is now back for the Clippers as well. So that's a picture that's painted also in both situations. Now, I feel bad for the Grizzlies because of the injuries that they're suffering, and getting to the finish line of the regular season not at full strength and having to go up against the Titans of the Western Conference is another thing. But for them, for the last four games for the Warriors, they're playing them twice. So, I mean, you know, they can't asterisk this, and it ain't like the Warriors can say, well, we'll sit there and wait for people to get healthy. They got to play that game, so on and so forth. But the last play of that game last night, a rebound went to Lance Stephenson after he missed the shot. He goes out to the three-point line. He steps out to the three. They're down 1 point. He steps out to the three-point line to shoot a three-pointer with three Warrior defenders in his face. There were three Grizzly players underneath the rim looking at him wide open. And he took the shot, hit the side of the backboard, screaming that he was fouled. And it did look like a foul, so on and so forth. They didn't give him the call. But you're not going to get the call like that up against the world champions, Steph Curry, and how hot the Warriors are. History on this side right now. The refs basically swallowed their whistle right there. I mean, they swallowed their whistle on travel calls in the league. Why would they call foul for you guys to clip the Warriors at that given time in the game right there? So the Lance Stephenson situation, I know that he's a good player. I know that they call him, you know, the beast out of Brooklyn, so on and so forth, but he has to be a team player in that situation. I know he wanted the big spotlight to knock down that shot and, you know, be the one, but that has to be team basketball in that shot, in that situation. He could have definitely just passed it to Zebo. Was literally under the rim looking at him like, I don't know what else you want to do. It's three of them jumping at your jump shot right now. I don't know what it is. I don't know. But like I said, the Warriors did survive to get out of Tennessee, and they are going. They're probably in Texas. Yeah, they have to be in Texas now. They have to have their shoot around. But they're in Texas for a matchup in which, this is crazy, people. This is crazy. The Spurs have not lost to the Warriors in San Antonio since Valentine's Day of 1997, in which that was the first year of Greg Popovich coaching that team. Tim Duncan was still in college at that time. So all of these situations, Tim Duncan has not lost at home to Golden State since he's played in the league. And they are trying to go for 41-0 at home. Being unbeaten at home is another thing that could be a feat that nobody's seen in the NBA. It has never happened. It never happened. So those situations are all on the line tonight. But if the Spurs don't come to play, they will lose that first game of the season at home. And I think it could happen, especially on a back-to-back. The Warriors are loose. The Warriors are loose. Anything else on this match before we get away from it?
Yeah, I'm good. I really like the Spurs winning this, though.
So you don't think they get past or you know, break the record? They could potentially tie it.
Right.
Okay. The next situation I have is the Chicago Bulls winning up against the Cleveland Cavaliers, in which this was a close matchup at the end of the game, and Dellavedova had the ball late, shot an air ball three, while LeBron James was basically 10 feet away from him, wide open too, and misses the three. Now, Dellavedova actually is a defensive specialist, and his other, you know, talent that he has, he's a three-point shooter. Everybody's up in arms that Dellavedova took this shot. Why is everybody so pissed off that he took the shot? Why? Because LeBron was wide open. You think LeBron would have made a better shot? LeBron has a lower percentage shooting this year. LeBron's shooting total or percentage total is down. But now you have guys like Kyrie Irving actually stepping up and saying, put the blame on him for the losses to the Chicago Bulls, in which the Bulls are hanging on by a nail or a thread to try and make the postseason, in which now the Pacers are the 8th seed, and that's the only shot that they have. If the Pacers lose out and the Bulls win out, the Bulls can get into the postseason. There is still hope in this season for Chicago. I don't know if they get it. I don't know if the Pacers have it up their sleeve to win a game to nail these guys out, but that is the scenario for the Chicago Bulls team. And I'm not going to lie, Sports City. I'm going to do it for Sports City purposes and personally as well. I don't really want to see the Bulls broken up. I don't. I still love the storyline of Derrick Rose getting selected by his hometown team, trying to turn that thing around. Injuries have been crushing him since the 2010-2011 situation where he tore his knee up, and every time he came back to the floor, he was getting hurt and couldn't really perform for the team. Now it's like it's rubbing off on everybody on that team. That whole Bulls team has basically been injured or missed time this season. Butler, Rose, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Powell's even sold out. Like this whole team, McDermott, like everybody's missed time this year. Everybody has missed time. So I feel bad, I think more or less, for the players. I don't feel bad for the organization because the Chicago Bulls organization, I don't know what it is with Krause and Leinsdorf. Like, these guys think they're the smartest guy in the room, i.e. what Chandler would say. You know what I'm saying? They got rid of Phil Jackson and Pippen but wanted to hang on to Michael Jordan. Now you get rid of Thibodeau, bring in Fred Hoiberg. This is the same team that Thibodeau had last year. Same team. And Thibodeau made the playoffs. You got Hoiberg there. They're under 500, clinging, trying to make the postseason. Trying. Like, I just don't get it. It boggles my mind. But, Tommy, your thoughts on Chicago still hanging by a thread, hoping that Indiana could lose the remainder of their games and they'd have to win out if they're strong enough to make a postseason bid and play Cleveland after they just beaten Cleveland last night in a matchup as well.
Real quick, before I get to the Bulls, this right here, last night, is why I've got Cleveland not going to the finals. You can't beat a Bulls team that really should be broken up. That Butler, I look for Butler to be gone, Rose to be gone. They'll keep some of the players. They got some young good talent. That the shooter out of Creighton, his name slipped me right now. But
Doug McDermott.
Yeah, that's him. You got him. He's pretty. He should be good. Let him. I mean, if he can. But Chicago, go ahead. I don't want to say it, but go ahead and pack yourself. You're not making the playoffs. Get ready to see where you're picking. I'd really look for Indiana to get that last spot. Indiana probably, they won't beat Cleveland. They won't be the team to beat Cleveland in the first round. They'll be done too. But last night, they just, when they get to the whole thing, everybody, well, LeBron should have did this. And LeBron, and then if LeBron would have missed that shot, everybody would have blamed somebody else. Well, they should have did. I'm telling you all right now, Cleveland's not making it to the finals unless it's fixed for them to make it. And Cleveland, I hate breaking news, get ready. LeBron's gone after this season, too.
He's gone. You think he's gone? Wow.
He's gone. He's going to go somewhere and it's going to shock people. I'm not sure where. He's going to go somewhere and get brave. There might be some players from Cleveland that follow. He's going to pick the following. I look for Cleveland to get their hearts broken again.
Do you see LeBron in L.A.?
Which one, Lakers?
Lakers, yes. Why Kobe leaves. There's a ton of money in Los Angeles.
I was thinking that, and then he give it, I think it's what, 2 years after next season, 2 years? Westbrook to follow. He's going to get Westbrook to come here with him.
Yeah, this boy's setting it up. Hey, look, look. First he want my small forward in DC. Now he's taking my point guard. This is crazy. I can't. They already got a point guard there. They already have a Russell there. They have a Russell at the point guard position. They have a Russell there. They don't need another Russell at the point guard. This is how I feel about the LeBron James situation. LeBron already came back to Cleveland, and that I'm back, and everything that scrutinized with him going to Miami, saying that he would win 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 championships, so on and so forth down there. He got to 4 finals, lost twice, 1-2. So that's fair enough. He got to the finals last year with Cleveland, and everybody, you know, got injured from Kevin Love to Kyrie. So this is supposed to be their bounce back season. And knowing that they are at the doorstep of the postseason, I think this is where everything gets critical for Cleveland. If they don't get to the finals, it would be crazy if LeBron left again. Because if LeBron left again, not only would I think the people in Ohio go crazy and start burning his jersey again, he could never go back home, like you know, on events, so on and so forth. And I don't think he cares either if that scenario was to present itself. But it's a crazy situation that LeBron has already stressed the fact in mid-season that he would love to play with his three brothers, being Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, and Carmelo Anthony. But now you're seeing late-game situations where you can see his body language. There's knowing that he doesn't like what's going on the floor. They had a timeout with him, and he was trying to talk to Kyrie. Kyrie wasn't even trying to hear him. Like, the way Kyrie basically kept looking forward and really looked like he wasn't paying LeBron any attention. These scenarios are looming around this Cleveland Cavaliers team. And this is something that I don't know if LeBron thinks about or people around him or the organization are trying to clear up. But I don't know if he heads for the hills again. If he leaves Ohio again, I don't think he can come back home. I think that is something that will be critical. If he does do it, I know that the money that he sits on, so on and so forth, but I know he's not concerned about that. But him being the best player in the world, one of the best players in the league, if you got to say it like that now, I mean, do we consider him to be in the talks of the greatest that sat in one organization and done it? You know, like Bill Russell, who sat in the middle of Boston his entire career, or like Kobe Bryant that sat in the middle of Los Angeles his whole career, or like Michael Jordan that sat majority of his career in Chicago and then ended up, you know, dealing with the organization down there, the Wizards, and actually stepping on the floor for 2 seasons down there. But, if he had it his way, he'd have stayed in Chicago instead of hung on them Scottie Pippen and Phil Jackson, or if he wanted to ride off into the sunset after the shot, so on and so forth. But LeBron moving from team to team to team, like Cleveland he starts out with, goes to South Beach, comes back to Cleveland. Things don't work out in Cleveland as it is fit right now. He goes somewhere else outside of this. I mean, do we really hold him to that light of not being able to shoulder the load or deal with the scrutiny or surviving the storm and building a team up better and stronger the next following season? Are these pictures painted around LeBron James feasible or fair? Or do you think he has the right to just up and leave organizations just because things don't work the way that he'd like them to?
I'm going to play another spin on this. One or two things are going to happen. He's going to leave or he'll stay. And there'll be a bunch of changes with former players that are on that roster now. If LeBron will take another pay cut to get certain players in to Cleveland. Something big's going to happen this summer with LeBron. Now, get to what you say. I think it's ridiculous how he thinks he can go here, there, and everything else. No, he doesn't have the right to, just because he's one. I'm not going to say the best player. He's one of the best players in the world that can. I think it's just ridiculous. So some of these players take this free agent thing or opt-out thing way too far. It's ridiculous. I would love to see players do what Kobe did, what Jordan did, and some of these others that did it.
That's the one thing that concerns me. He's a physical beast, 6'8", 260. They list him at 260. A lot of people throw out there he's 270. Oh, well, whatever. Huge guy. in which he carried this Cleveland Cavaliers team to the finals twice. He's gotten there with the Drew Ilgauskas and that bunch with Booby Gibson, so on and so forth. He got there last year with Kyrie Irving and the group that they had, J.R. Smith, Shumpert, so on and so forth, but they're not shooting good. That is the one thing that is the question about this Cleveland Cavaliers team. They have one or two good shooters that I can look at. You got Kevin Love that can knock down a three here or there. And Kyrie can shoot the ball as well also, but they're not shooting the ball consistently, and I think that is the one thing that actually lurks for them. But when does LeBron actually get some of this blame? When do they start to look at LeBron as like, well, the pieces don't fit around you. They actually feel intimidated by being on the floor with you, with having to perform. If they don't come out and perform, then they get scrutinized by you at the end of the day. Like, when does he shoulder some of this blame or load at the end of the day? He doesn't even look at himself while everybody else sits up there and takes the blame. I still remember with him and Kevin Love going at it earlier this season. Kevin Love, you know, he was saying Kevin Love doesn't fit, and Kevin Love, you know, saying people need to look within themselves, everybody on the team, so on and so forth. I mean, there is smoke in Cleveland. You know what I'm saying? That's the one thing I'm looking at right now. While they are getting to the doorstep of the postseason, these situations still loom for this Cleveland Cavalier team. I mean, the comfort zone is minimal. They just lost their head coach in the midst of this season. I mean, David Blatt only coached one season, got midway through the season, got removed and replaced by the assistant coach next to him in Tyronn Lue. And Tyronn Lue's doing a decent job there, but, is it the role players? Is it LeBron James? Is it a situation where he won't get over the hump as comfortable as he needs to? I mean, let's be honest, LeBron has been to, what, 6 NBA finals, right? And he's lost 4? Like, does he get to a 7th and loses 5 or wins his 3rd? Like these numbers are something that people should be concerned with. I mean, is it LeBron? Like he's a great player. I know a lot of people will walk away from that. Why won't people set that dish up? I'll cook it. What about what LeBron does? His shooting percentage is down this year. Damn, people aren't talking about that. They aren't. They're talking about
everybody else. Isn't his turnover ratios up too this year?
We can speak on it. Like I said, what about LeBron? What about LeBron? What about him?
I don't see Love there next year.
Out of any one of the supporting cast on that Cleveland team, you're right. I think Kevin Love is out of there.
Somewhere through the West Coast.
Right. If they don't get to an NBA final, if they get to an NBA final, I see him sticking around if they lose an NBA final again. Because last year he didn't even get to play because he had a separated shoulder. He was out. So I know that him getting to an NBA final would be a dream in itself, because last year we know he left in the first round up against Boston, messing with Kelly Olynyk. That was a whole other situation. But if they don't get to an Eastern Conference final or the NBA final, he'd be the first thing smoking out of Cleveland just because of all of the things that he's dealing with, whether it's him and LeBron or him and the media or him and some of the players on the team. And I know that they're trying their best to try and make that thing work, but they're forcing the issue. It's not happening naturally or having these guys buy in. I think they're more or less just trying to coast and see what they can do up against the other teams in the Eastern Conference to make a push toward the finals. If they get there, I'm not even painting the picture like they are, but if they do get there. Okay, Tommy, I have one more topic before we roll up out of here. And I am, you know, Tennessee Lady Vols and you know, college women's basketball situation. I'm a diehard Tennessee fan, right? And the reason why I like them was because of Pat Summitt, the coaching ability Pat Summitt brought to the women's college basketball situation. Coached since the 70s, never changed, always brought out a good breed of basketball, so on and so forth. You know, life occurs, people have children, so on and so forth. Her son, Tyler Summitt, now the former head coach of Louisiana Tech, the Lady Techs, in which he's a married young man, 25 years old, head coach of the team. You know that a lot of people see his mother probably and his coaching ability, or I don't measure him to Pat at all, because then I'd have probably followed him down there also. But in which had an affair with one of the players on the team and got her pregnant while he was married. And he was forced to resign. Your thoughts on the storm. Now, a lot of people are actually painting a picture that this can tarnish, and this is what killed me. This is why I bring this up, because like I said, I'm a Tennessee fan, that this can tarnish Pat's legacy or her coaching legacy down there in Tennessee. I said, how? Why? Like she has Alzheimer's. Like she's not coaching anymore. How could y'all try to paint that type of picture on her son who is now grown and married? Like, he's a grown man now. Like how could you try and throw Pat under the bus on that decision that he made? Like, is that what she raised him to be? I highly doubt that. But he has to use better judgment in any other scenario. I don't know if he gets back into lady basketball coaching again. How do you have a player on your team and you're messing around with it? And got her pregnant. Really? Tom, your thoughts on the situation with Tyler Summitt, now former head coach of the Louisiana Tech Lady Techsters?
Wow. This is the first time I've heard this. This is a shocker. Where have I been? My goodness. It's shocking, but I look for him to get – he'll get another coaching job somewhere, assistant job. He's going to – I could watch. Just because of the last name Summitt. I mean, take nothing away from his mother. I don't watch a lot of women's basketball unless it's my Hurricanes, but I did watch Pat. She would be one female that I would love to have had coach me, because the woman knew her basketball. Wow. What was he even thinking? I mean, you caught me off guard on this one, because I've never even heard about this.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. It's like, wait, where did you and this player on your team end up in a bedroom? How?
I mean, was him and his wife that? I mean, was he that unhappy or unattracted to his wife? That, I mean, wow. I mean, I don't even want to get into the whole personal stuff, because I don't know the whole backstory. But
right,
wow. What are some of these coaches, teachers? I'm not even letting teachers off, because there's female teachers out there that are getting busted for this same stuff over and over and over.
You would think he would learn from the Rick Pitino situation. Rick Pitino just went through this down in Louisville. And now your name pops up in one of the bigger names in college basketball. Even though it's in women's basketball, Pat Summitt is huge to college basketball, whether it's women or men. And you end up impregnating a young lady that you're coaching, that she's looking to as a mentor, so on and so forth, to be better in life, and you get her pregnant while you're married and had the kid out of wedlock.
All I got to say is he better take care of her child. He better not throw her to the curb.
Right, I don't know how far along she may be, but this is the story down there, that the reason why he did resign was because of this. He has to resign. I mean, you can't have a player part of the team when the season's over, you know, but she's pregnant. If she decides to keep it, that's a whole other situation, another can of worms and so on and so forth, man. But, wow, like I'm still stunned about it. But the one thing that actually got to me was they were trying to tarnish Pat's legacy, and I'm like, there's no way, no how. She had nothing to do with that. Head audit. I mean, she's actually fighting for her life and her health situation. Her son makes his own decision. It's not like she said follow the game plan and do some crazy stuff. No. All right. Well, we are at the tail end of the show. I did want to get that one out there before we did get out of here. I need a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we shut it down at the brunch. Tommy, excellent stuff, man. And we, like I said, we got the big matchup tonight. Golden State on the road in San Antonio up against the Spurs. Can they get it done? Can they actually knock the Spurs off on a, what is it right now? This is a 19-year run. This is a 19-year run that the Spurs are on that they have not lost to this Warriors team since.
Well, yeah, nice show. We got a lot that we had to talk about. There's something I want to bring up. I forgot about it until I seen the preview for the pay-per-view. Cormier. Yeah, you fat, you know what? So now you got to come up with a leg injury. Because you know damn well you cannot beat the baddest man on the planet, John Jones. And you're praying he loses this fight coming up. Guess what? He's not. And like John said, enjoy that belt as long as you can. Because eventually you're going to have to get in the octagon with me. And he's taking back his belt. So keep fake, come up with these injuries. And why can't you make the injury win? Get in the fight. Get in the cage. Lose your belt. And then go back to being an announcer and everything else you do for Fox. I'll be nice and won't call you what I want to call you, oversized fat. Get in the damn octagon and fight the champ.
Well, he's not the champ yet. He's not the champ
he's
yet.
The champ.
John, he had some off the or out of the octagon situation that made him lose that belt. He has to earn it back. Let's be fair. He can't stay out of his own way. He got in trouble again. I mean, he just got in trouble again. So that's the one thing about John Bones Jones that I just don't get. Hopefully,
okay,
he'll
understand. I'm keeping his personal life out of this. I'm just going strictly in the cage, in the octagon.
Right. Right. I agree with you. I agree with you. You got to beat him to take the belt from him, but all the things that are going on with him, I think that's the reason why Dana White went that way. And making them earn that belt back. But you know me, I personally know one of these fighters personally, so I really want to see him and Rumble go at it. Then that be John Bones Jones and Rumble, because even though he beat Anthony for the belt, I think if Anthony actually took that fight more seriously, because I don't think Anthony was the seriousness was there in front of Anthony while he fought Cormier. Cormier got him tired, wore him out. It wasn't even like he
don't worry, it'll happen. You'll get Jones and Rumble because that's going to be the next big thing because Cormier is going to bitch out again. And then Dana's going to say, you know, these two players will be, you two will fight again and then the number one contender. Watch. It's going to happen.
So we'll see. As the UFC builds this hype up, I did have more stuff around UFC. I did like that you brought that one up, especially a new interesting situation that's developing around Conor McGregor, but we'll get into that Sports City. Y'all stay locked and loaded. We'll be back throughout the week. Y'all already know. Come right back here, same SportsCityChefs.com. That is the website for you to download the show. Thank you to everybody that's been checking us out on iTunes, so on and so forth. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Ooh. Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing I got, one thing to wish you people.
Good morning.
It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark and Moses and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
Sit back, relax, and 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.